Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio. Unplug, strap yourself in, because you are about to move beyond the matrix.
Hi, this is Rod Bryant, and along with myself is Jerry Gordon, my amazing co-host, who came into the studio breathless, had a rough morning, busy all day, and now he's here. Remind you that Torah Learning Channel is brought to you officially by, Beyond the Matrix is officially sponsored by TorahLearningChannel.com. Did you know that the Torah Learning Channel can be viewed on Roku, on Amazon Fire, and YouTube app? Yes, 24 hours a day. You can learn Torah from the best English Torah teachers in the world. Try it out today and make the Torah Learning Channel your daily Torah learning source. Watch now at TorahLearningChannel.com. Jerry, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing much better. There's a little bit on fire, but that's okay.
Okay. I'm glad. You know, when you get to a certain age, it's good to be on fire at some level.
That's very true.
But not in that way, right?
Correct.
We'll keep that off the air. We have a great show lined up for the listener. And look, we're really excited about having this guy by the name of Mike on, a brother of a man who was killed in Houston as part of an honor killing back several years ago. And we're really lucky to be able to get Mike on, because we're going to get an exclusive into the case, what took place, and also the trial is actually in the penalty phase right now, and we're finding out that Ali Mahoud Awad Ershan is being tried right now, and the penalty phase could be a capital offense, which would be murder, obviously, which would be the death penalty. Hopefully, God willing, it'll be the death penalty. Jerry, you know well about this as well, because you have some friends that are in this particular field.
Yes, one of them is a world famous psychologist, and also she's a Zionist.
Right.
But she's also had the unusual experience of having been married at the age of 20 or 20 and a half while in college to the son of an Afghan diplomat. Her name is Dr. Phyllis Chesler.
And sometime in the future, near future, we'll have her on after we talk to Mike about the Houston honor killings that have taken place, and this very complex, amazing story that will unfold. Don't go away. You're listening to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Shalom from the heartland of Israel. This is David Ha'ivri. Join me every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 o'clock Eastern, for A Hebrew in the Heartland on Israel News Talk Radio. Hear the news and views from the heartland of Israel every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time. Be there.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
That didn't take too long. We're back from the break. I'm Rod Bryant, along with Jerry Gordon, my sidekick and co-host. And we have with us on the line today, Mike. We won't give the last name, just because. And Mike is the brother of Cody Beavers, who a number of years ago, and he can give us the exact year, etc., Cody was murdered in his apartment at the time. Very shocking event in which the family was not too shocked, because they knew something was going on. Mike, take a moment and sort of set the pace or set the place of what was going on during this period of time, and what year was this?
So in 2011... and it was in, I believe it was June of 2011, was when Nisreen first showed up at the house. And whenever I say the house, I'm referring to my mother's house. And from that point, we started learning more and more about where she was coming from, what she was running away from and trying to escape. So as we talked with her, we learned more and more about what her home life was. And for me, and I think for my mother and my other brother, it was kind of a surprise to find out some of the living conditions that she was having to go through.
And Nisreen is the daughter of the now accused killer, correct?
Ali Ersan, yes.
Yeah, Ersan, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So Nisreen was Ali Ersan's daughter. And the reason she had shown up to our house was because she was in a relationship with my younger brother, Cody. And Cody and Nisreen had been kind of, you know, young dating online. They're sending messages to each other, text messages, instant messages, all those kinds of things. And then then it just kind of abruptly stopped. And Cody had known enough about Nisreen's situation to be suspicious that something had happened to her. But he couldn't get any kind of communication back from her. So he was very concerned. He tried a number of ways to get in touch with her, and none of those resulted in anything until she actually showed up on my mother's doorstep one night with just the clothes on her back. So from there, we started learning a bit more about like I said, what was happening in the home, the level of abuse that her father had put not only her through, but her siblings through, as well as in addition to his wife at the time. And so we started reaching out to law enforcement and different agencies and making them aware of what Nisreen was trying to deal with and trying to get away from. We even went so far as to get a protective order to ensure her safety. And despite going through a number of measures to try and help her to be safe, her father continued to pursue her relentlessly. And he had one goal in mind, and that was the death of his daughter. And he wanted to cause as much pain as possible to not only her, but to the people around her. So we started experiencing things around the house that were very suspicious, like tires being slashed and then cars breaking down. And then whenever we would take those cars, you know, we'd take the car into the shop, we'd find out that someone had put sugar in the gas tank. And we didn't really know what it was initially. And now everything has kind of come together in hindsight because of what's been revealed in the trial. But it was all part of his attempt to stalk the family and everyone that was living in the house where Nisreen was staying. So we were staying there. It was my mom, both my brothers were there, and Nisreen was there. Nisreen was in a relationship with Cody. Nisreen got married to Cody. And then Nisreen was very close friends with another young lady by the name of Gelare Bagherzadeh.
And explain for a moment who Gelare is.
So Gelare, and this is a little bit complex because my younger brothers are twins, so their names are very similar. So you have, on one hand, Corey, who was in a relationship with Gelare. And then you have Cody, my other brother, who is in a relationship with Nisreen. So Nisreen and Gelare are very close friends. Corey had met Gelare at school at MD Anderson in Houston. And they'd begun a relationship, and it was a very good relationship. They really liked each other a lot. And so both of these couples are very happy. There's just this one element that unfortunately kind of overshadows everything, and that was Nisreen's dad. In November of 2011, Guillory was returning home late one night. It was January of 2012, and she was returning home, and on her way in trying to park, she was shot in her car late that night. And we were all kind of baffled as far as how this could happen, because Guillory lived, you know, she lived in a very nice neighborhood, so it wasn't just a random crime. Someone turned the wrong corner. Guillory didn't really have any enemies or anyone that would be after her that we had known about really at the time. We had suspicions, but we didn't really know how it had happened or who was responsible. But we cooperated with law enforcement to try and help them to follow up on leads.
Now, at the time, were you guys even remotely suspicious of Ali Ershan?
He was one of the suspects, one of the primary suspects that we named when we were initially questioned by the police.
Okay, Jerry, you had a question?
I did. Mike, what was the relationship like between the two women? One obviously came from a Jordanian Sunni background, and the other was Iranian. How did they possibly meet?
So they had met at MD Anderson as part of one of the medical programs that they have there.
Yes.
And so they were classmates. And I think they had a lot of shared background in a certain sense, in that I know Guillory had converted from Islam to Christianity, and Nisreen was doing very much the same. And they're both in the same medical program. They're, you know, dating these two boys. And Guillory was very outspoken and very much for women's rights and human rights in particular, and was a political activist as far as what was happening in Iran at the time. And that was very important to her. And I think she, in a way, was kind of a someone that Nisreen could look up to and say, "This is what you the type of life you could be having. You should be free."
How did Nisreen in particular escape from this rather, how shall I say, extremist Islamic background to go on and further her education?
Well, there are a couple of things there. The only, from the information that we've been provided, the only reason why Nisreen was able to attend school, first of all, she was self-taught. She was withdrawn from any type of public school, I believe, at fifth grade. And so she used books that an older sibling of hers had left at the house, and taught herself.
Wow.
And schooled herself, and got to a point to where she could go to a junior college, and then went from Lone Star College in Texas to into the MD Anderson program. But the only reason that she was allowed to go to that program, according to testimony that we've heard, is that her dad said, since her sister was going and he had more trust in the sister, then he would let her go. But if her sister wouldn't have been attending, she would not have been allowed to go to school.
Ah, interesting. So yeah. Let me ask you real quick, because we only have just a couple of minutes left in this segment. This whole family lived somewhat on a compound in another county outside of Houston, correct?
They did. And what happened was, as far as I think an earlier question was, how did she escape?
Right.
So there was a bit of a fight between these two sisters that were going to school together, Nisreen, and she was driving. And just to give you the short version of it, Nisreen was driving. She was attacked and crashed the car on the highway. Whenever they came to pick her up and take her to the hospital, they took her home. and kept her locked in a room. The only way she was able to escape was she told the family after being held captive for, I think it was a matter of weeks. She escaped out. She said she was going to take a shower and escaped out the window in the shower.
And that's when she ended up showing up at your house. We're going to have to go to a break, so don't go away. This very interesting captivating story is getting ready to unfold in front of you. So don't go away. You listen to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I'm Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country. From Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Just a short reminder, Beyond the Matrix is sponsored by TorahLearningChannel.com. Did you know that the Torah Learning Channel can be viewed on your Roku, Amazon Fire, and YouTube? Well, yes, 24 hours, 6 days a week, Torah can be learned from the best English Torah teachers in the world. Try it out today. Make Torah Learning Channel your daily Torah learning source. Watch it, TorahLearningChannel.com. And I'm Rod Bryant, and I'm back with Jerry Gordon and Mike. We're talking about the Houston honor killings, plural. And in reality, Mike, we find out in the court that there's actually more than two killings, correct?
That is correct. The jury did not find that out as part of the legal proceedings until after the guilty verdict. But there was another honor killing that was ruled a act of self-defense that has now become under review as well. And there are enough suspicious circumstances, and especially knowing what we know now, that these are just the three killings that we know about.
Right. And it appears that the family member testified that it was not self-defense, correct?
That is correct. The testimony that was given by the, if it's the one that I think you're referring to, the sister did testify.
Right, the son-in-law. And his son-in-law was he murdered.
Yes.
Right.
And in the 1999 murder, basically what had happened was, again, you had Ali Ersan not approving of his daughter marrying a certain suitor. And this one was actually, he was Muslim, just not, did not meet the approval of Ali. And Ali kidnapped his daughter and drugged her and carried her, took her through the airport, drugged, took her to Jordan, left her with family, and then came back, invited her new husband over to his home to make the peace. And let's talk about how we're going to, now that we're family, how do we celebrate this marriage? And whenever he came over, one of the things that was really tragic that came out as part of the trial was that he'd brought a truck, like a toy truck, for one of the young children that was in the home. Because he was a nice man, he was a good man, and he was coming with the best of intentions. And he came over, and Ali invited him into the house. He had a seat on the couch, and Ali's wife at the time went and made a made coffee for them and put it down and then left the room. And Ali came out with a shotgun and fired the shotgun into the husband, into his chest. He then moved the body, manipulated the body, and used a small handgun to fire off a couple of shots. And then he pulled the children into the a room and then told them, this is a story that you will tell the police. He called his brother and had his brother corroborate the story so that there wouldn't be any questions. They showed up and said, yeah, that's what it looks like. And pretty much that was the
end. Right. And so we're only finding this out in the trial. Now, let's go back to we now have the death of Nazarene's friend. And she is now after the death, you guys are slightly suspicious, but don't know. But then all of a sudden, things kind of began to change, in which the harassment you guys were experiencing became worse, correct?
That's correct. So after Gilray was murdered, there were a number of the number of suspicious incidents increased, and the severity of them became more and more. So what I mean by that is that initially maybe the air pressure was let out of tires. Now tires are being slashed. Now cars are being stolen. Now there's someone parking on the street watching the house regularly. And Ollie had actually gone so far as to go to the neighbors' houses and offer $100 to neighbors that were willing to provide information on when Cody or Nisreen would be leaving or arriving at the house.
Wow.
He created a flyer that he handed out to the neighbors on the street with his phone number on it and a picture of Cody on it to say, if you see this person, call me and let me know where he's going and when he's leaving. So we didn't know about all of this all at the same time. It kind of was unfolded to us. Cody's car was stolen. It still has, to this day, hasn't been recovered. It likely never will. It's been shipped off somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
The number of times where tires were slashed and sugar in the gas tank increased enough to where we started to know this is a targeted act.
Now, Cody and Nazreen at some point decide to move out. They get an apartment, and out of their own sense of security, was armed and got a third-story apartment because they were concerned about what was going to happen, correct?
That's correct. So before Cody had gotten into the relationship with Nisreen, I don't believe he'd ever owned any type of handgun or rifle at all.
Right.
And he got a few guns for defense. And when they moved out, it wasn't that long after they moved out that the same types of suspicious incidents had followed them to this other complex. Now,
right.
What was kind of surprising to me was that whenever I first heard about it, and there are a number of things that you're processing, but I'm thinking this is a young newlywed couple without a whole lot of money. Maybe they didn't go to the best apartment complex. Maybe this apartment complex didn't have a lot of security measures.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, I've been to that apartment complex, and it's better than any apartment complex I'd lived in. It's a gated community. It's a very nice apartment complex. There are cameras there in certain spots. They're not entirely around the building, but it was a good place in a good part of town.
Mm-hmm.
And what it's kind of related to something that a number of people have said, and I have to kind of explain it to them, is if you're in this kind of danger and you know someone is coming after you, then why don't you just get out of town? And that sounds great. However, you have to have the financial means to
be able to
do that.
Right.
And that is one of the things that Ollie had done, and he had help from people within his family. To very, you know, different people to different degrees in different ways, but they completely destroyed Nisreen's credit.
So I was going to ask, the whole family actually participated in this harassment, did they not?
There's some some that are children that I'm not too sure about, but I know sisters and brothers that were a part of this. Mm-hmm.
I think Jerry has a question. Jerry, you had a question?
Yeah. Mike, I'd like to take you back in time because we need some history regarding the perpetrator himself, specifically when he came to the United States, under what auspices, when did he marry, and whether he married multiple times, because I understand that at one point there were, 12 kids, I guess, in the compound. How did he exist economically?
So from the information that I've gotten, I believe Ollie came to the United States around 1979, may have been 77. He was around 20, I think he was 23 at that time. And he'd had a number of jobs. He wasn't initially in Texas. I believe was in Michigan was where he met his first wife. And he met his first wife in Michigan, and the way that he met her was really quite tragic. She was visually impaired. She wasn't entirely blind at the time, but he had a number of odd jobs, and he worked at a gas station. He worked at a grocery store and a couple of places here and there. However, at some point he moves to Texas, and I think that was probably in the early 80s. And then from there, he essentially set up a number of schemes, manipulating Social Security, insurance schemes, their schemes with Chase Bank, their schemes with Sears, their schemes with Social Security. But his first wife, eventually she couldn't tolerate the excessive beating and torture. And whenever I say torture, I'm not talking about a minor level of torture. I'm talking, in the words that I told the police at the time, this is something on par with John Wayne Gacy, with what he's doing to the people in this house.
Wow. That's incredible. Yeah. I mean, and the thing is most of this stuff only really sort of became knowledgeable common knowledge in the trial. We're coming up on the break. Mike, when we come back, I'd like to pick it up there. And then I'd like you to tell the story about your brother's assassination in his own apartment. We'll be right back. You're listening to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Israel is located in one of the most volatile areas in the world. Israel is an island of stability in a sea of war and unrest. In the midst of this turmoil, Israel stands out as a beacon of order and human progress. Each week we update you on what's happening in this, the Jewish state, a true light unto the nations. This is Jay Shapiro. Join me every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
We're in segment three, actually the final segment of Beyond the Matrix, here with Rod Bryant and Jerry Gordon and our guest Mike. And we're talking about honor killings. The real reality of honor killings came to roost in the United States in Houston, Texas. A number of years ago, the trial just now is at the wrap-up phase, actually the sentencing phase right now. Mike, going back to the story, we understand Ali Ershan had a first wife, a very abusive relationship. She finally got out of it. Sean marries another woman, has a number of children, and now we're at a point where he, which at the time you guys didn't know, is directly responsible, or one of his sons, responsible for the murder of Cody's wife's best friend, or Corey's girlfriend, correct?
That's correct.
And so let's talk about the lead up to Cody's death and what happened.
Okay. So after Gallery was murdered, everyone was in the family was very much on edge and very concerned, because as time passed, we became more and more convinced that it was Ollie or Sand.
Mm-hmm.
And Cody, I kind of touched on Cody and Nisreen had moved to another apartment complex. And within a month of being there, similar incidents start occurring. Air being let out of tires. And Cody and Nisreen were saving up for a living room couch because they didn't have much. And the money that they had set aside for that couch went to repair Nisreen's car for work. And they were sharing one car. And, you know, as newlywed couples, they had a air mattress that they kept in the living room, and they kicked a bundle of towels on the left and right side as kind of armrest for this couch. So all the money that was to go to a couch went to this car repair. And what had happened was Nisreen had left one morning. Cody walked her out, as he always did. And she got about a mile down the road, and the car started breaking down. And she happened to be close enough to a mechanic's repair shop and pulled right in there. And the reason why I talked through that is because one of the things that came out in the trial was that Ollie was following her. And the plan was that he would put something in a gas tank so that the person would then leave. They would get about a mile down the road and then break down. And when they got out to check on the car and try and figure out what it was, that's when he would approach and kill them. So that was his initial plan. But because Nisreen was able to pull into a mechanic's lot, he couldn't get to her without someone seeing and catching him. So that happened. And then I think at that point, Cody and Nisreen were aware that they'd been found by the Ersan family. It happened really so fast because I found out about it in October, and I had, you know, a number of things that I was telling him to do just as safety measures. And then the next thing, you know, within a matter of weeks in November, we got a phone call. I got a phone call, and I was living in California at the time, and I'd come home from work, and I was working on a set, and got in probably 10 o'clock and was exhausted. And my roommate came in and woke me up and said, your phone's been going off like crazy. I think you've got 12 missed calls. And they were from my mom. And I know the time difference in California versus Texas, so there's got to be an emergency. So I called my mom, and actually my brother, Corey, answered the phone. And the first thing he said was that they killed Cody. And
tell us how that happened. Can you recount the story for us?
So it's still something that I'm trying to get as much information around, but as best as we can understand it, what happened was that Cody was and Nisreen were very cautious about being safe. And what Nisreen would leave in the mornings around 6. At that time of the year, it was still very dark in the morning. He would walk her down and make sure that she got into her car safely, and then would make sure she drove away safely, and then would go upstairs. They went downstairs. They had seen something that looked suspicious, maybe a couple of shadowy figures is what's been heard. He had a 9mm handgun with him. He gave the 9mm handgun to her, told her it's loaded, it's in the glove box. If anything happens, that's what you can go to. And she'd worked, she'd trained with the 9mm before, so she knew how to operate that gun. He saw her leave and then went upstairs to the apartment. What we think happened was that he may have forgotten to lock the door whenever he left. And they went in. And from testimony we've heard from others is that they, the two that went into the house, Ollie being one of them, moved from the master bedroom to the bathroom, back to the master bedroom on where they were going to find him. Cody came into the apartment. He made himself a snack for breakfast, turned on the TV, and then I guess they came into the living room, and he said, "Oh God!" And then there was some type of fight between them, and then he was shot.
I can tell, Mike, it's a very painful thing to even recall yourself in this situation. I mean, my heart goes out to you, but to those who are listening, this is a very personal story to me. I've known Cody since he was, I guess, about 12, and I've known Mike, Cody, and Corey since they were young, and this hits home. It's very personal. It's when honor killing becomes very up and close and personal. And Mike, from this, what kind of message would you want to send to the world around you that would shed light or bring some good out of this very horrible situation?
I think one thing that's very important to us is that we, first of all, acknowledge that honor killings are very real in society. These aren't random events that are happening in remote parts of the world. They're happening in neighborhoods across the United States. They're happening in Europe. They're happening in Canada. This is not something that is only going to be found in very particular. It's on the rise. Honor killings are on the rise in America. Honor violence and early identification for it and understanding what victims of honor violence are going through is something else that's very important to us. And I think working with law enforcement and other agencies to provide the kind of support and aid that these victims are needing. And when they reach out to law enforcement and to other agencies to know this, these threats that they're describing and the fears that they have are very real.
Mm-hmm.
Because once they report these, they may not have a second. There's a good chance their father could kill them right after that,
right,
and their body would never be found.
I guess the thing is, Mike, it's hard for us in a civil society in which most of us are raised in a fairly functional environment. I mean, it may not be the best, but mostly functional. It's hard for us to imagine living in a home in which there is sort of some level of ritualistic religious fervor at some level that sort of condones violence toward women, just in general, even if it's not religious, but rape and abuse. It's hard for us to fathom that. And even as a former law enforcement officer, to have someone come up to you and explain, "Look, I come from my home in a compound in this county, and my father does X, Y, Z." It's just like so mind-boggling, it's hard to put your brain around it. So, Mike, I really appreciate you coming on and talking about it. Jerry, do you have a last thing that you want to say before we close?
I do. I think that Mike has been extraordinarily candid and courageous in discussing this horrific tale of abuse, rapine, and murder. And it's not murder of a casual nature.
No,
it's driven by extremism, jihadism.
Right. And Mike, is there anything else that you want to say before we close out?
The one thing I would also add is what was very telling to me with regards to honor killings is we always say, I encourage you first and foremost to do your own research.
Right.
Go and dig up your own facts. Don't take my word for it. But what you will find once you do the homework and you do the research, what's concerning is when you start to find countries and governments that have put into place laws to protect these sons and brothers and fathers who commit honor crimes.
And that is a shocking reality. And you're absolutely right. There's a number of great books. As a matter of fact, we'll have a guest on in a couple of weeks that has written several books on this subject matter. Mike, I really appreciate it. We really wish you the best. And hopefully at the end of the sentencing phase here, the penalty phase, you're going to get a death penalty for Ali Arshan. So, Mike, thank you so much. You've been listening to Beyond the Matrix here with Rod Bryant and Jerry Gordon. We'll see you next week. Shalom.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom!
Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling from the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candle lighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.